From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. There has been a lot of excitement surrounding yesterday's release of Harper Lee's book, Go Set a Watchman. Many of you are still working through it if you stood in line for a copy. And there are so many questions the book is raising. Today in the program, we're going to work through some of them, and we'll promise no spoilers. Among the questions, should the book have been published at all? Was it just a first draft of Lee's beloved To Kill a Mockingbird? How does this version of the story change your perception of characters you've come to know and love, like Scout, like Atticus, who is a more complicated figure in this new book? And then, of course, there's the question, how is the book itself if you set everything else aside? And can you really set everything else aside? We're talking about Go Set a Watchman today, and we invite you to join us after the news.
Hey there, podcast listener. This is Benjamin Bombard. I'm one of the producers of Radio West. Thanks for downloading this episode of the show. If you enjoy what you hear on Radio West, think about pitching in $10. It's a one-time donation that'll show up on your phone bill. Text KUER to 85944 and enjoy the show.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Harper Lee's book, Go Set a Watchman, was officially released yesterday. You sometimes hear it referred to as a new book, but most of you know by now it's not really new. In fact, Lee wrote it before her beloved classic, To Kill a Mockingbird. But the story is set about 20 years after Mockingbird, and so it's kind of intriguing to learn what's become of characters like Jem and Scout and Dill and of course, Atticus. Because by now you've heard the Atticus in this book comes off a little down off his pedestal a bit. So we'll talk about that today, about how this version of the story may change the version you're so familiar with. We're also talking about what this book tells us about the creation of To Kill a Mockingbird, and also what can we learn about race and race relations. We invite you to join us. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Have you read Go Set a Watchman? Are you reading it now? Are you afraid to read it? Again, 801-585-WEST, the number to join the conversation. Joining us here in the studio, two experts, Betsy Burton, co-owner and co-founder of King's English Bookshop. Betsy, welcome back.
Thank you, Doug.
And Catherine Weller, co-owns and co-manages Weller Bookworks in Trolley Square. Welcome back to you.
Thanks, Doug.
Any of you afraid of reading it?
Don't be afraid.
We're not afraid of any book.
No, and I say that facetiously, sort of, but not really, yeah. Because I think knowing, you know, we got little dribs and drabs about what it might be about.
Right.
Certainly the crucial factor that Atticus wasn't quite the saint that he maybe was portrayed of in To Kill a Mockingbird. Did that terrify you at all? Like, I don't want to ruin that image that I have. Not an icon, but at least the image.
No, it wasn't terrifying because you knew coming right out of the shoot that she had written this before.
Right.
So presumably if...
So that was a disclaimer for you as you read the book.
Right. Suddenly if he appears to be a racist, she's clearly changed her mind in the intervening years before she wrote To Kill a Mockingbird. So I didn't take that part of it very seriously.
Yeah, I who's afraid of Atticus Finch? It didn't terrify me because Atticus Finch has never been the idol to me that he has been to a lot of people because, as I've discussed with several people, I came to this book late. Yeah. I didn't read it in the formative years. So it never, while I recognize it and admire To Kill a Mockingbird as an incredible piece of American literature, one of the masterworks of the 20th century, Atticus never became that idol to me. So the fact that he has feet of clay, really, that's okay. Besides, I like complex characters. And he becomes a more complex, more fully realized person in this book. And I think that's a good thing. That's important.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, I wouldn't agree that he's more complex in the second book, which is the first book, actually, Go Set a Watchman. I think he was far more complex in To Kill a Mockingbird. And the reason, I read the New York Times review, which sort of said what you just said, that he, in fact, reflected the times and reflected the complexity of living in that time. But I thought in To Kill a Mockingbird, he... went his own way quite purposefully, had a code, and but still he was a very complex man. And in that final scene in To Kill a Mockingbird, he first is willing in the name of truth, he's willing to have his son take the blame and then to insist that Boo take the blame because he's so rigid. Mm-hmm. But I think the rigidity comes out like it should in a novel in To Kill a Mockingbird. It's part of the art of the book. Whereas in Go Set a Watchman, he's who we always thought he would be, and then suddenly there's this scene, no spoiler here, because we all know from the paper what happens, when he declares himself like something in an Ayn Rand book, and the whole crowd declare themselves. And to me, that wasn't at all artful. It was sort of the opposite of
It isn't artful at all, you're right.
So it seems like you had two things going on. On one hand, Kat, you prefer the Atticus off his pedestal and Go Set a Watchman, but it's not as artfully constructed.
I would agree with that. It is not as artfully constructed. It is not as tight a novel. And one of the ways it's not as tight is in its characterization. That is something I would have loved to have seen be firmed up a little bit, as well as some of the language. It could have been edited a bit more.
See, but this is the point, though, and it raises the question. We'll put this to Charles Shields when he joins us here a little bit later on the program, and that is, should this have been published at all? Mm-hmm. I mean, because there's that argument that this was really just her first draft. Mm-hmm. This was the thing that she presented to the editors, to one particular editor, and we'll talk about that as we go. But and they said, it's good. But it needs, as you said, Kat, it needs editing, it needs work. And so she goes and sets about to write it, rewrite it, rework it. It was painstaking. She spent more than 2 years, mm-hmm. I think, reworking it. And then you get To Kill a Mockingbird. That's her fully realized version of it. That's the version that she wants set out there, it seems anyway. So why publish Go Set a Watchman? That's the question. Should it have been published at all, do you think?
Well, if
forgetting the fact that you're booksellers.
No. Yeah. Well, that is. Of course it should be published.
Right.
No, you know, if you take it as the first draft, then absolutely. It's interesting. It shows her growth as a writer. It shows this, you know, this book is a set of set pieces. They're funny.
He's talking about Watchmen.
Watchmen, sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm pointing here to Watchmen. Go Set a Watchman is set pieces. They're funny. They're really entertaining. But it's like reading a comedy of manners until you get to the drama. It doesn't go down very far. And then the structure, as we just said, is pretty flawed. And the end is very didactic. So it's like an outline. And then if you know that, when you're reading it and you know what To Kill a Mockingbird is, you can see the writer's process going on. You can see her flesh out the characters, and the characters take over the story and take over the morality in a whole different way. And I was thinking, looking at these two books, that on the cover it says Go Set a Watchman, and then it says To Kill a Mockingbird. Well, Go Set a Watchman is all about bearing witness. I mean, you know, you're assigned to go set a watchman, to watch what's happening, listen. And that is bearing witness. To Kill a Mockingbird is about art. Mm-hmm. You know, he says about the mockingbird, you must never hurt a mockingbird because they bring beauty into the world and they don't harm anybody. And to me, that's a great symbol of the difference between the two books. To Kill a Mockingbird absolutely is art. And Go Set a Watchman seems like an outline of what could become art.
Someplace headed toward art.
Yeah.
But not quite there.
Not at all there.
Yeah, there's a real striving towards that great Southern mid-century literature in this book that I see. It's Go Set a Watchman with its biblical implications and the moral compass. It's striving towards a very Faulknerian kind of narrative. And no, it doesn't reach that. Does that mean it shouldn't have been published? I don't know. In a way, I think that's the only question that Harper Lee can answer. Yeah. But on the
and
other
she's
hand,
not
she's not talking.
Right.
There are authors who write the same book their whole careers over and over and over again. And does that make them bad books necessarily or bad authors? No. Sometimes it makes them better books and better authors. And it makes a very profound reading experience to watch that evolution of story, of writer, of experience. It makes reading a fuller experience, ultimately.
I agree with that.
You know what's interesting is the way, and again, I'll be careful not to give away spoilers, but we do already know that Atticus Finch is a more complicated character.
Less complicated. Okay. More racist.
More racist. Good. Well put. Yeah. And Scout, Jean Louise, is very much disillusioned by that fact in Go Set a Watchman. But there's this moment toward the end, a conversation with her uncle, Dr. Finch, Uncle Jack, which I think, whatever you think about how well it was crafted or how it came about, he does raise this question, Kat, I think that you mentioned as well, this idea that Scout, you've always fastened your own conscience to your father. And now that you've seen him for who he really is, finally seeing him for who he really is, you can set your own watchman. You can create your own sense of consciousness. And that seemed pretty profound. I liked that part, I think. Or did you think it was overly simplified?
I think he did the exact same thing at the end of To Kill a Mockingbird, much more artfully, when he says, he really is insisting that Boone needs to be punished. And she says, "No, Father, To Kill a Mockingbird." You know, she reminds him. And that's when he agrees. And it's the same point. It's
just the Dr. Jack one was more didactic, a little
exactly.
bit more over. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
exactly. And that's what I thought was the great flaw in the third of Go Set a Watchman. It was very didactic. It was like Ayn Rand.
Yeah.
You know.
It was.
Beat you over the head with it a little too much?
It did beat us over the head with it. What makes it very interesting to me is that in many ways this could be a book written by certain Southerners today. And yes, and I think that perhaps this is a good book for the time because we, in that very didactic section, all of those arguments that came up in the 60s that were talking about race in the South and what the Confederacy means, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that are being brought up again today, it is processed through again. And yes, it's a very didactic way, but obviously we as a society haven't dealt with that yet. And so I think maybe this is an opportunity for us to look at that. Less artfully, yes, but seems to me that we're always struggling for that kumbaya moment with race rather than really looking at ourselves and looking at the issues. And maybe this can help that. I don't know. I'd like to think it could.
Well, I think that in along those lines, this question is so big. You know, what is the intent? What is the meaning of the Confederate flag or the word Dixie? By the way, which we're going to talk about tomorrow in Utah's southern part.
Yeah.
The question that it seems Jean Louise has to work through in Go Set a Watchman, and certainly in To Kill a Mockingbird, too. But she is older, after all. She's 26 now.
And she was 9 at the end.
And she was 9 at the end of To Kill a Mockingbird, is what am I supposed to do with the fact that Dad's a racist?
Mm-hmm.
He's also fair. He's also wise. He's also kind. But he has racist views. And the man that I think I love or I think I may want to marry has the same kinds of racist views.
Right.
What am I supposed to do with that? Do I accept it? Do I leave? Like, those are really big questions that I thought were interesting raised.
Aren't those the questions that readers are asking themselves about this book?
Yeah.
That's one of the things I think is very funny about this book is those are the same questions that all of these angst-ridden people have about Go Set a Watchman are asking.
But the thing about Go Set a Watchman to me is that the questions are raised very didactically, and it's in To Kill a Mockingbird.
So you can't get past that.
I can't get to
the bigger point because it's
be,
so clunky. Is that what you're saying?
Well, but I'll get back to the bigger point. But you're so much more convinced about the whole subject of race by just knowing Calpurnia. It's like knowing Dilsey in The Sound and the Fury. You know, she is this totally admirable, warm. She's everything good. And it isn't false good. It's just she's a warm, likable character. And it seems to me that underlines the point about race far more convincingly to any reader than
– And subtly.
And much more subtly than some didactic argument, which is what you get in To Kill a Mockingbird. But then the question – And this is at the heart of both books, but I think it's, again, done more convincingly in To Kill a Mockingbird is, you know, they live in a community. They love each other. They respect each other. And to be didactic, do you have to leave and destroy, or is there a way to kind of come together? And I think that real – it's a conundrum. It's not solved in either book. But I think she deals with it better in To Kill a Mockingbird because you see both sides so inside of – from character so that it's part of the story and part of the people, and you're deeply involved with the people. And so you're deeply involved with the community and all the issues there. Struggling over
it. It almost seems like the writer, Harper Lee, took the advice of Atticus, get inside a person's skin.
Absolutely.
She did it better in the second book.
That's what she did, exactly.
Yeah. Well,
that is the difference between a masterwork and a good work of fiction.
Yeah.
It's not a bad book.
No, it
despite
isn't.
What all of the panning reviews we saw, it is not a bad book.
Okay, final question, because we're out of time. Should people read it?
Absolutely. I think it's a great read on its own until the last third. And I also think that it informs To Kill a Mockingbird in a very interesting way.
Agreed. For all the perspectives it offers on To Kill a Mockingbird, for all of the ways I think it will make people look at things again, absolutely they should read it.
Catherine Weller co-owns, co-manages Weller Bookworks in Trolley Square. Betsy Burton, co-owner, co-founder of the King's English Bookshop. I knew you'd have something to say about this book. Thank you both very much.
Thanks, Doug.
801-585-WEST, the number to join us. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'll take a break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about what a lot of you readers are talking about, Harper Lee's new book. And I'm putting that new in quotes here because it's a book, of course, she wrote in the 1950s, which came before her beloved classic, To Kill a Mockingbird. It's called, you know by now, Go Set a Watchman, set 20 years after Mockingbird. And there's a lot to talk about, which we're doing today. Charles J. Shields is joining us. He's a biographer who has written books about, a number of people, about Kurt Vonnegut, for one. He wrote about the John Lennon song Imagine as well, and his biography of Harper Lee called Mockingbird, A Portrait of Harper Lee, came out in 2006. Charles Shields is joining us today from the studios of NPR member station WVTF in Charlottesville, Virginia. And Charles Shields, welcome to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
I guess let's begin with some general impressions. And I guess it's fair to say yours are, I guess, a little bit like our earlier guests, Betsy and Catherine. Not terribly impressed. It seemed not quite ready as a work.
I think you're putting it mildly. All right, let's straighten up our desks a little bit here.
Yeah.
What is a novel? A novel is not just 60,000 to 80,000 words in sentence order. A novel is an art form. It has a narrative arc to it. It's divided into chapters. Every chapter has between 4 and 6 scenes. In those chapters, people make moral choices and they change. There's a crisis. There are reversals. And finally, a resolution. From that standpoint, Go Set a Watchman is without literary merit. It is not a good novel. It's a baggy, discursive, rambling, memoristic, highly autobiographical book by an inexperienced writer.
So let me – I want to unpack that as we go along, because I think what's so interesting is what you write about in your book, what we know about the creation of To Kill a Mockingbird, that it came from this earlier version, which is now being sold as this quote-unquote new book. You write about how for years Harper Lee was in this series of really unrewarding jobs, and she takes a long time to get going as a writer. 1956 seems like she really started to get serious, and she submits these short stories. And then when she was finally able to write full-time because she got some support from friends, I think this was 1957, she submits to her agent those initial pages of Go Set a Watchman. Would you talk about this moment? Because this is the first – I think your idea of what is a novel and what isn't is the reaction she gets to that first manuscript, those first pages of Go Set a Watchman. Is that right?
Well, I think to do this right, we have to back all the way up until the 1940s. She had chosen a subject like this as a young woman in college when she was at Huntington College in Montgomery, Alabama, which was at that time an all-women's college. She was writing for the Literary Magazine, and she wrote a story about a wise attorney who deals with black defendants. It was just a short story, yeah, but you can see the sort of wry sense of humor and the distinctive voice. There are even some descriptions in that short story that show up in Go Set a Watchman and then in later To Kill a Mockingbird. So it was her ambition to be a writer all the way back when she was 18, 19 years old.
Yeah.
She left University of Alabama without completing her law degree because she wanted to be a writer. Her father was very disappointed. So she went to New York. And she got a job as an airline reservationist for Eastern Airlines. She lived in a little cold water flat in Yorkville, New York. She wrote on weekends and at night. Like how many hundreds of thousands of other young people have done something similar where they've gone to the literary capital of the world and they're going to buckle down and they're going to become published. And now she had someone she knew in her back pocket as a very dear friend who encouraged her and showed her that it could be done, and that was Truman Capote,
yeah,
who was her next-door neighbor when she was growing up in Monroeville, Alabama. And Truman appears as Dill in To Kill a Mockingbird. So she writes and writes, doesn't send out anything for years from her apartment until finally, as you say, a couple of friends of hers, Joy and Michael Brown — Michael was a Broadway lyricist and Joy was a retired dancer — gave her money so that she could work uninterrupted for a year on her manuscript. And she finishes Go Set a Watchman, which went by another working title for a while, which was Atticus.
Right.
And I think some of the hubbub about there's a third novel and there's a fourth novel. Authors write drafts. Sometimes novels die on them. Mm-hmm. Quite often they try out working titles on friends and just see what the reaction is. So there are friends of hers who remember her talking about a book she was writing called Atticus, and that became Go Set a Watchman. So what we have now is Go Set a Watchman, mm-hmm, the first draft by a 26, 27-year-old young woman who wanted to be a published writer. Now, do you want to talk about how it turned into To Kill a Mockingbird?
I do. And so let's get to that meeting, which you write about, with the editors of the publishing firm Lippincott. And this is where she meets a very influential editor. Tell us about that, because they've seen the manuscript and they said, you know, there are nice moments, but as you said, it's not quite there yet, or not at all there yet.
It was far from there.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a very, very good article in The Atlantic that came out, I think, just yesterday. I had never seen these letters before, and I would have given my eye teeth to see them when I was working on Mockingbird back in 2006. But the son of an author who was a client of Harper Lee's agent, Maurice Crane. Yeah. Maurice was in partnership with his wife, Annie Laurie Williams. Annie tended to handle film rights, and Maurice did the close editing. He, yeah, was a tough, whiskey-drinking journalist, World War II pilot from the 8th Air Force. And he did the line editing, and Annie handled the film rights to things. Annie, in fact, was responsible for bringing Gone with the Wind to the screen. So in this article that appeared yesterday, there is a reproduction of a letter from Maurice to one of his author clients saying that the rewriting of To Kill a Mockingbird for him was extensive and deep. He had never worked so hard on a manuscript before. And this is before it reached the desk of Tay Hohoff,
wow,
the editor at Lippincott. So now we have another hand involved in the crafting of To Kill a Mockingbird. This agent felt that it needed a lot of work even before it could make it to Lippincott. And that explains the six-month gap that I found in Annie Laurie's records that show that Go Set a Watchman was delivered complete sometime in 1957, and then there's dead silence for about 6 months, and then it's recorded that it has been sold to Lippincott. And it passed into the hands of Tay Hohoff, yeah, an experienced, tough-talking, Germanic, Quaker-educated lady in her 60s who was working with another young author at that time named Thomas Pynchon. And she walked Harper Lee through the transformation of a very loose, memoristic manuscript into a real novel.
It raises a question about, was Harper Lee, is Harper Lee, a great writer? I mean, did she just get lucky in this, with Mockingbird, in the sense that she had an editor, two editors, maybe more, who helped her clean things up? Because you say in the book that undercutting Harper Lee's achievement had always been a persistent rumor. Like, there had been this rumor, and you write about this in your book, that Truman Capote had written To Kill a Mockingbird in part. But you say also in the book that without question, the hard work of creating To Kill a Mockingbird fell squarely on Nell, that is Harper Lee. So what do you think now? I mean, what do we make of that question?
It's different jobs. There are different jobs here. There is the person who must sit alone in a room and write, and there are people who know how to bring a book to market and the kinds of things that readers like, and those are their specialties. Editors are like directors, film directors or stage directors. They're like football coaches. They're like the boxing coach in Rocky. Mm. They see talent. They see potential, but they show you where you drop your right when you should not do it. Right. They show you when you're not convincing on stage because you're not coming across. And when Harper Lee sat down with Tay Hohoff, Ms. Hohoff told her, "We love your book. You have a very fine, very strong voice. I could just about taste the red dust coming off those roads in your book and feel the sun falling out of the blue sky on those Alabama summer days. But you don't know how to write a novel."
Right.
And to her eternal credit, Miss Lee did not say, "Well, I've worked 8 years on it, and if this isn't a novel, I don't know what is." You know, because some people will think, "I've given it my best, and if this isn't good enough, there must be something wrong with you." But to her credit, she worked through that manuscript for the next 2.5 years.
Yeah.
It went through 3 complete rewrites. And during that time, Tay Hohoff was instrumental in helping her craft a novel, helped her bring the protagonist to the front, helped her eliminate things that had no business being there. I think one of the most egregious examples of something that doesn't belong there in Ghost at a Watchman is a chapter devoted to a Methodist church service.
Right.
Even I, who go to church every Sunday, found myself nodding off as there, an argument was going on about hymns and the doxology and things like that, as if anybody cared. So, you know, you just can't put something that's the size of a telephone book out there and say, "Well, it's long, it's got a lot of people in it, and it's funny, therefore it's a novel."
Yeah. There's a great story you tell that relates to how much work Harper Lee is putting into that book. I mean, at one point she just couldn't bear it anymore, and she threw the transcript out the window.
Yes, she did. Yeah, she said, she told a friend that writing a novel for her was like building a house out of matchsticks. One matchstick at a time. And finally, one night on a snowy night in November in the late 1950s, she had just had it with this book. And, you know, when you get really, really close to something, my father, who was a journalist, used to say, when it smells of the midnight lamp, you know, it's just been worked over too much, it loses everything. All the blood and sass goes out of it. Mm-hmm. And she was at that point. This was the third draft. And as she was sitting at her typewriter, she was trying to write and she couldn't. She pulled the piece of paper out of the typewriter, put it on the third draft of To Kill a Mockingbird, went over to the window and threw it out the window into the alley. Then she called Tay at home and said, "I give up." And she was crying. She said, I don't want to be a writer. I don't have anything to say. I don't know what to put in, what to take out." And Ms. Hohoff, who had been through this dark hour with other young writers, sort of read her the riot act and said, "Look, it's not your book to throw out the window. We've worked for 2.5 years on this book. My fingerprints are all over that manuscript. And secondly, this is a small matter of the advance. If you don't submit a completed novel, you're going to have to repay the advance." So Nell went out in the alley, picked up the pieces of paper, brought them back in. Now remember, this is well before the days of printers.
Right.
And had to retype a lot of the pages that were ruined. And when she finally turned it in, she told friends in Alabama, "All I'm hoping for now is a merciful death at the hands of the reviewers." She was so tired of that book. But something else exciting came along, which was In Cold Blood. No sooner did she turn in that manuscript, finalized for To Kill a Mockingbird, than Truman called and said there was something terrific and exciting out in Kansas, and he needed her along.
Such a great part of the story of about your book, Mockingbird. One of the things that Tay tells her and other editors is something you mentioned earlier, Charles Shields, and that is that this the Go Set a Watchman really lacked this overarching story. That it was, you know, that it didn't have a story like in Mockingbird, the crime story. That was the story that really sort of was the through line. And this crime part that Harper Lee chooses is a really intriguing part of the story that you tell about her life. You say in the book that Harper Lee chose a crime that was infamous in her hometown of Monroeville. That is a black man accused, probably falsely, of raping a white woman. And I wanted you to tell a little bit about that, because that's the story she had that story in mind before, but it's only really alluded to briefly in a crime story in Watchmen.
Right. Most people assume that the trial in To Kill a Mockingbird is taken from a notorious incident involving half a dozen young black men who were accused of raping two white girls. The Communist Party became involved because they wanted to show up the justice system in the United States. One of the young men was only 14 years old and was sentenced to the penitentiary. It was really shocking and very lurid. Yeah. But she didn't need a canvas that size. What she needed was something that would just turn a small town upside down. And what it was an actual case involving a man named Walter Lett, who was accused of raping a white woman. And he had an airtight alibi. He was at work. He worked at a brick factory. But in those days, a white person's word counted more than a black person's. And he was convicted of rape and sentenced to die. While he was awaiting the death penalty in Montgomery, the poor man lost his mind, became catatonic, and was sent to an institution where he later died of tuberculosis. There's actually a street in Monroeville named for him. It's Walter Lett. Walter Lett Street. Yeah. And I asked some of the people down there who remember the trial, well, do you think he was guilty? And they said, you know, in those days, if a woman became pregnant, a white woman became pregnant who had a black lover, it was certain death to identify the person. So what you would do is you would blame some poor other hapless soul. So it's quite possible that Naomi was carrying on with someone and became pregnant and, you know, identified this man as a rapist, and he had no defense other than his word. It wasn't me.
Yeah. And you say the verdict and the story itself didn't sit well with some of the leading citizens of Monroeville. And this is really where her father comes into the story, because one of those who didn't like the verdict apparently may have been her father, A.C. Lee. Would you talk about this part? Because this seems like where she brings her father into the story.
Yes. Well, a number of leading citizens in Monroeville signed a petition which they sent to the governor, and Mr. Lee's signature had weight on that petition because he had been in the state legislature and he was also the editor-in-chief of the Monroeville Journal. So any savvy, you know, governor knows whose favor he has to curry, and the petition, when it landed on his desk, meant something. But it gives you an indication of the temperament of the times, that despite the fact that Walter Lett was obviously not guilty, not even the governor could pardon him. Instead, he commuted a death sentence to life in prison. And that shows the nature of the mindset at that time. He must have done something,
yeah,
or he wouldn't have been in court.
Right.
And so we need to make examples of people like that. It's really very, very sad. And one of the many upsetting things about Go Set a Watchman is the language in the book, the low-mindedness, the vulgar terms used for people.
Yeah.
What I think – what really bothers me about the book is, as one of the ladies from the – one of the bookstore owners mentioned earlier, it's the artlessness of the book. And that militates – that works against the book in two different ways. First of all, it's very upsetting to see that kind of language in print.
Yeah.
I won't even try to paraphrase it here. But secondly, it exposes more of Harper Lee than she probably wants exposed.
Right.
What I mean is you really have to protect an author. Authors create a persona for a reason. You know, they're trying to stand back a bit from their child, from their baby. And nevertheless, in this book, she just surges forth. And I think when we really start peeling back the pages of this book, we're going to see that Harper Lee has made statements about her sexuality that she probably didn't want known, mm-hmm. about how she feels about men, what she thinks is proper behavior in polite company.
Yeah.
I mean,
there was a reference, Aunt Alexandra's son, yes, referred to as a $3 bill.
Francis, yeah.
Francis, right? Yeah. I mean, these references that, again, would the Harper Lee of today, as you say, would she have wanted that kind of, you know, this reference obviously to him being gay, would she have wanted it described in that way? I think that seems to be the thing that really bothers you.
Yeah, all of the things that we know out of hand shouldn't be repeated and are typical of people who feed on hate are repeated in this book. And she doesn't contradict them. Jean Louise Finch sits there and listens to this kind of talk. And she's not outraged. She's only puzzled. And it's very surprising. And she does not have any of the moral certitude of someone like Atticus in To Kill a Mockingbird. And you might ask, well, what's the transformation? How did she, in so many words, get religion between 1957 and 1960? What accounts for the transformation?
Right.
It's really a product of Tay Hohoff.
Yeah.
Tay was liberal. Tay was sophisticated. She was a New Yorker, and she knew what sold. And she needed – she put a lot of her own values into that book. She had written the life of a Quaker abolitionist, mm-hmm. whose last name is Eliot. She's a biographer herself. And Atticus embodies many of those qualities. Now, one other thing we need to establish is, you know, about change and how to – Watchmen become To Kill a Mockingbird. Understand that in To Kill a Mockingbird, you have a 9-year-old viewing her dad as a great man, which parents often seem to 9-year-olds.
Yeah.
Secondly, this is in the 1930s, and Atticus Finch's white paternalism seems at the time very decent and very Christian. But in Go Set a Watchman, it's all starting to come apart. It's 20 years later. The White Citizens Council is meeting. They are afraid. They're worried about things getting out of hand. They want to preserve the status quo. So the little town of Macomb in 1930s was under the thumb of the white residents. The little town of Macomb in the late 1950s seems to be coming unraveled. And that's why leading men like Atticus and like Jean Louise's boyfriend Hank go to a meeting and think about what are we going to do?
Yeah.
How are we going to respond to the uprising of the blacks?
So what do you make, Charles Shields, of the fact that in the original incarnation of this story, that Harper Lee doesn't make her father a saint? As you point out in the book, you say A.C. Lee was no saint, no prophet crying in the wilderness with regard to racial matters. Harper Lee knew that. And in the original book, she doesn't put him necessarily on a pedestal. She takes him down at the end. But Tay Hohoff maybe said, let's keep him up there? I mean, what do you make about that part?
Well, in a novel, let's see, a fundamental character of a novel like this, a novel that's largely a novel of manners, has to be a heroine and a hero, or just a hero. A.C. Lee, as he's constituted in Go Set a Watchman, is neither man nor beast. He's somewhere in between. It's not quite clear who's in charge in that novel.
Yeah.
Where do we get the forward motion from? So Atticus Finch arises in To Kill a Mockingbird as a Solomon. You know, he strides through the pages of that book like a colossus. He has such moral certitude. He guides us through a very dangerous situation. And indeed, that may well be how it seemed to a 9-year-old, but it's not how it seems to a 26-year-old. And that's a typical human experience.
Right.
When we get to be that age, we begin to see our parents in a different light. This book, To Kill a Mockingbird, is worth teaching to young people. I taught it for many years as an English teacher. It's a wonderful introduction to making moral choices, to standing up for what you believe. It's an example of great literature in that great literature asks you questions about yourself as you read the book. But Go Set a Watchman has none of those elevating qualities. It's really getting down in the pig wallow, and I don't want to be there.
Charles J. Shields is with us. His biography of Harper Lee is called Mockingbird, A Portrait of Harper Lee. It was published in 2006. We need to take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are talking about the book released yesterday from Harper Lee, Go Set a Watchman. Charles J. Shields is with us. He is a biographer who's written about Harper Lee. His book, Mockingbird, A Portrait of Harper Lee, was published in 2006. He's joining us today from Virginia. Charles Shields, do you have any insight now? I'm wondering if Watchman, that whole process, has given you any different insight about why Harper Lee chose not to write again or not publish a novel again. I mean, this sounds like a bit of a conspiracy theory, but I did mm-hmm. wonder, is there at all a possibility that while she was very proud of To Kill a Mockingbird, that in some way she may have been disillusioned by the process, that her voice may have been overtaken by, you know, by Tay's voice, or that it was too much work for her? I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, it's an interesting insight, and I've never thought about it before, but I think you hit on a key point, which is that later on in her life, she didn't want to talk about the book anymore.
Yeah.
She referred to it dismissively as the bird. Maybe the adulation made her uncomfortable because, you know, the follow-up question would always be, well, what are you working on now?
Right.
And what can we expect next? So, you know, when you get up to bat in the major leagues for the first time and you hit a home run, everybody expects you to do it again.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, possibly she just couldn't. Also, her support system faded away. Maurice Crane and his wife, Annie Laurie Williams, retired not long after that. Maurice died not many years after To Kill a Mockingbird came out. And her editor, Tay Hohoff, retired from the business. Mm-hmm. And so the support system who had brought this young, earnest woman along was gone. Now, why didn't Go Set a Watchman come out right after that? Yeah. I mean, I've seen a note from Annie Laurie Williams to Nell that's teasing her and saying, can the Mockingbird have a little brother or sister soon? Because they were hoping to capitalize on her success. Well, they had Go Set a Watchman complete. Why didn't they bring it out?
Right.
First of all, Alice didn't want it brought out. Yeah. Alice Lee is Harper Lee's elder sister who passed away last November at 103. And she never wanted that book brought to market. I think as a loving daughter, she didn't like the portrait of her father, who was the basis of Atticus Finch. I think as a devout Christian, the book made her uncomfortable. And I think she was protecting her little sister by saying, there's no need to bring that book out. Why?
Yeah.
So the book stayed under wraps until Alice died last November, and then Hosanna, we found another
right.
book. So, you know, it's very unfortunate for Miss Lee, and people ask me, should I read it? Well, I say it's not a literary event. It's a cultural event. It's worth reading because it will really make you realize where we were in mid-century 20th century America. You will hear remarks, you will hear language, and you will hear bigotry of a nature that will make your hair stand on end. And we're not so far from that in this summer when the Confederate flag is debated, when code phrases like Southern heritage and a Southern way of life and states' rights are all coming to the fore again. And as Lincoln said in his second inaugural address, the late Civil War, late rebellion, as he called it, was about slavery. And that's what this book is about. It's the dregs of a system that enslaved millions of people. And now the generation of Mr. Lee is wondering, what are we going to do from here out?
Yeah. You know, it's
a tense book.
Yeah, very. It's interesting if you look at someone like J.D. Salinger, who obviously became really elusive and reclusive, didn't publish again, but apparently did keep writing, kept honing his craft. Do we have any sense of whether Harper Lee kept, whether she wanted to publish again? Do we know whether she kept writing? If she has been?
Well, she, after To Kill a Mockingbird came out, she did contribute two short pieces to, I think, one to McCall's and one to Ladies' Home Journal, and they're pretty good. Yeah. But remember, they're short, and they're both nonfiction, interestingly.
Yeah.
They're not fiction. She was asked by Esquire magazine to write an essay about the South, and they were surprised when her submission came in because it wasn't very good. And it wasn't what they asked for. What they were looking for were insights into what the historian W.J. Cash called the mind of the South. And instead, what she handed in seemed to be, from what the description, a piece of Go Set a Watchman. And they wrote her back and said, thank you, but this is fiction, and it's not what we wanted. So she did continue to write. She was a very outgoing correspondent, very dedicated. I've heard people tell me that they have drawers full of letters from Harper Lee. Hmm. So someday we may see a collection of Harper Lee's letters. But Go Set a Watchman puts her legacy in jeopardy. And that will only play out in the coming years.
I wondered about if you look at Watchman as sort of a clumsy bit of memoir or autobiography. Mm-hmm. I thought about – it's still there, and I don't want to give too much away at the end, but it's very much up in the air throughout the book as to whether Scout is going to return to her home. Is there any way of knowing if this was how Harper Lee was working out a decision of whether she should leave New York and go home, which, as we know, she did?
Right. Well, Harper Lee went to New York primarily to get away from that suffocating little environment that she was in. Yeah. But her sister Alice insisted that she come back regularly and help care for their aging father. All of the burden of being the heir fell on Alice. There's an interesting autobiographical element in Go Set a Watchman in which the narrator says that her brother Jem died. And the way it's described is almost exactly how Harper Lee's brother Edwin died. He died of a cerebral hemorrhage in his early 30s after playing softball on a blistering hot day. And it was said around town that Mr. Lee was hoping that Edwin might one day take over the law practice that he had established, that he would be sort of the heir apparent. And when he passed from the scene, Alice stepped into her brother's shoes. And so Alice's nickname, Bear, B-E-A-R, has a lot of meaning to it. And she insisted that her younger sister, who was playing the bohemian in New York, come down regularly and help maintain the family legacy, which Harper Lee does reluctantly. I think it's a wonderful metaphor in the first chapter of Go Set a Watchman that the train overshoots the station.
Right.
it's as if the train is reluctant to stop.
Yeah.
You know, let's just keep going all the way to the Gulf.
You know, it's interesting. You said something, I think, rather compelling a few months ago when you were talking about this on the Diane Rehm show, this experience of going into a church and in a niche there seeing this silver hand of a saint. Mm. And the idea that Harper Lee had become canonized, that people don't really care about the truth of a person if it matches this icon, this iconic image that they may have it. Would you say something more about that? Because I thought it was really, really apt.
Yeah, well, yeah, if I can set that scene. I was in Spain last summer in the town of Ronda and going to Mass there at a small church, and in the corner was a niche with the hand of a saint that was encased in a silver glove. And you could only see a small exposed area of the saint's hand through this silver glove, and people would come and look at it. And I said that Harper Lee had become almost like that saint in the niche where people express reverence. That has, you know, carried over onto Atticus Finch too. Mm-hmm. But, you know, saints are good in that they inspire us, but they also sometimes set the bar impossibly high, you know, giving rise to saints who cross the Irish Sea balancing on an oak leaf, and saints whose heads are cut off and they still speak when they're on a silver platter. You know, those things are fun to think about, but we live in the real world, and people are flawed, and people have prejudices. So consequently, the adulation that's given to Harper Lee, it's sad to see it fall away, and it's sad to see, in a sense, what's happened to Atticus, but it is part of growing up. It's part of realizing about something about the world that we live in and that we are human.
So I know you're tired of this question. Alice mentioned, you write, that there was something, another book that she'd been writing about deer hunting or something, that it had been stolen. There's also this reference that she had submitted more than 100 pages of another novel called The Long Goodbye. I mean, anything else out there? I know you're tired of that question. What do you think?
Well, in the 1980s, she was working on a book called The Reverend, which was a nonfiction book about a murderous reverend in Alabama who was the beneficiary on some of his congregants and life insurance policies, and they began dying one at a time. And he became richer and richer until finally at the funeral of one of his victims, a relative stood up in church and shot him in the back. And everyone went out the windows. The prosecuting attorney said it's the only time there's been 300 witnesses and nobody saw anything. He was acquitted, as a matter of fact. He would have been acquitted probably because no one would testify, but he was dead. She didn't finish the book. She borrowed the files from the attorney who defended the reverend through three different cases and never returned them. And then I understand just recently when his family, the attorney's family, asked for the return of the files, Ms. Lee's attorney, Tonya Carter, said that Ms. Lee didn't recall borrowing the files. So that's, you know, there's a lot of abortive attempts here at publishing something else. I hope that someone shows some restraint now and does not continue to bring out things that happen to have Harper Lee's name on it, or we'll be seeing grocery lists.
Charles Shield, his book is Mockingbird, A Portrait of Harper Lee. It came out in 2006. He joined us from the studios of radio station WVTF in Charlottesville, Virginia. Charles Shields, thank you very much for the time.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure.
Radio West, a production of KUER News. Technical direction from Tim Slover. The program produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio.